Living a life that depicts the teachings of Islam is the dream of every Muslim. Everyday Muslim, Saturdays 11 a.m. on Women Radio 91.7, is in collaboration with Muslim Public Affairs Center, NPAC. Everyday Muslim will address the misconceptions on Islam, foster a peaceful coexistence, and guide the everyday Muslim on the journey in Islam. Everyday Muslim, Saturdays 11 a.m. on Women Radio 91.7, simplified understanding of the deen.
When you feel all alone in this world and there's nobody to count your tears, just remember no matter where you are, Allah knows. Allah knows. When you're carrying a monster load and you wonder how far you can go, with every step on that road that you take, Allah knows. Allah knows. No matter what inside or out, there's one thing of which there's no doubt, Allah knows. Allah knows. Special someone, feel your whole life has barely begun. You can walk on the moon, shout it to everyone.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin was salatu was salam ala rasulillahi wa ala alihi wa sahbihi wa sallam. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I am Abdul Hakim Qasim and I welcome you to another edition of Everyday Muslim Show on Women Radio 91.7 FM. Today is Saturday, the 11th of October 2025, corresponding to the 19th of Rabi'ul Thani, 1447 AH. It is the third Saturday of the fourth month of the Hijra year 1447 AH. We thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for the gift of life and that of good health. On this program, Everyday Muslim, we try to address misconceptions about Islam, foster peaceful coexistence in the society, and guide the everyday Muslim on their journey in Islam. It is brought to you by the Muslim Public Affairs Center, MPAC, in partnership with Women Radio 91.7 FM. Allah the Almighty, the Exalted, says in the Glorious Quran, in Quran chapter 4, verse 3, "And if you fear that you shall not be able to deal justly with the orphan girls, then marry with other women of your choice, 2 or 3 or 4. But if you fear that you shall not be able to deal justly with them, then only one, or the slaves that your right hand possess, that is nearer to prevent you from doing injustice." Today, inshallah, we shall be delving into a matter that is very, very important. It has to do with the family establishing a very, very good family and maintaining tranquility within that union. This program is actually streaming live on YouTube via the Women Radio YouTube page. Yes, so you can go online, log in to YouTube, search for WFM 91.7, then you will see that red logo. Then that's Women Radio YouTube page. So just click on the live button and you see the studio live. It is streaming. All right. So later on in the program, we will open our phone lines for you to call in and share your thoughts. Okay. So today, we want to look at before you say I do. Why genotype compatibility matters in marriage. Before you say I do, why genotype compatibility matters in marriage. As an introduction, it is important for us, so everyone, you know, a lot of people look up to the day when they would say I do, especially for the females. And for the man, I would also propose to say, would you, you know, marry me? All right. So, but in Islam, marriage is more than a social contract. It is a sacred bond, a union that joins two hearts, two families, and generations to come. While love, faith, and shared values form the foundation of a strong marriage, there is another crucial yet often overlooked factor: genotype compatibility. Genotype compatibility. Sadly, unfortunately, many couples overlook this vital consideration before saying "I do," only to face lifelong pain later, not just for themselves, but for the children born into that union, into that marriage. Sickle cell disease, one of the most prevalent genetic disorders in Nigeria and beyond, continues to bring immense physical suffering, emotional strain, and financial burden to countless families. Islam, while teaching us to trust in Qadr, that is the divine decree of Allah, also commands us to act with wisdom to protect life and to prevent harm. Genotype testing before marriage is one of such preventive steps rooted in responsibility and mercy. Mercy for our families, mercy for the unborn children. So how can young believers, parents, and communities address genotype compatibility with maturity, faith, and sensitivity? How do we balance love and science, emotions, and responsibility when making one of life's biggest decisions? Yes, I dare say marriage is one of the biggest life decisions that people make. So we need to understand that it requires balance. So help us reflect on this deeply important topic. We are honored to be joined by Hajia Anisa Ishaq Balogun. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. All right. So, please, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you.
All right. Jazakumullah khairan. Thank you. Now, for viewers or listeners, I'm saying viewers because this is, you know, this program is also streaming live on YouTube. All right. So, and for our listeners out there, if you're meeting Hajia Anisa for the first time, so Hajia Anisa Ishaq Balogun is a dedicated advocate in the fight against sickle cell disease. She is the founder and executive director of Anisa Sickle Cell Foundation, ASCF, a registered nonprofit organization on a mission to create a future where families and individuals are free from the burden of sickle cell disease in Nigeria. She is a first class graduate of cell biology and genetics from the University of Lagos, Nigeria. As someone who lives with a genetic condition herself, she has witnessed firsthand the huge strain it imposes on such families. Her academic expertise in molecular genetics, coupled with her personal experiences, drives her passion for contributing to the quest for treatment advancement. Again, Hajia Anisa Ishaq Balogun, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and you're welcome again to Everyday Muslim on WFM 91.7.
Thank you for the introduction. It's a pleasure to be
here
today.
All right, good. Okay, so to begin with, you know, many young people hear the advice, check your genotype before marriage, but really, a lot of them really don't fully understand its implications. Could you start by breaking it down for us? What does genotype compatibility really mean, and why is it so critical in marriage decisions, especially in this part of the world, Nigeria, to be precise?
Thank you so much for the question. So most times when people hear genotype, they often refer to our blood genotype. For as humans, every part of your body is controlled by your genotype. So there are different genes. When we say genotype, we're referring to your total genetic makeup. That is the number of genes that make up you as a human being. And each of those genes are set to, you know, control the production of one particular trait, from your eye color to your skin color. So when we're talking about genotype here, we're referring to our blood genotype. And this blood genotype, you get it from your parents. That is, a bit of it is inherited from the mother, and the other is inherited from the father. And now, this genotype, like I said earlier, that our genes that control everything in our body, our blood genotype is controlled by what we know as hemoglobin. This hemoglobin functions to carry oxygen that we breathe in to every part of our body. So for humans to stay alive, you need oxygen, and that oxygen is gotten from the environment. But for it to get to every other part of your body, the red blood cell in our blood needs to transport it to every part of our body.
Okay.
So most times when you ask people what is a genotype, you say things like AA, AS, and SS.
That's all we know now. That's all we know from our biology in secondary school.
So each of these genotypes are actually gotten from your mother. You can see that it's two letters, A and A. So you either get the A from your mother, you got the other A from your father.
Mm.
And now, in every human, at different stages of our life, there are different genotypes that are normal. So we have what we call the enrolling A, which you will find in an adult human. But when a child is at the newborn stage or even inside the womb, there is a different set of genotype that is normal at that particular stage.
Wow.
But due to certain things that have occurred in the body, certain changes, a different composition in that particular gene that made up the hemoglobin, we have other variants, thousands of variants of that are like the hemoglobin X, which a lot of people know as sickle cell. We have the hemoglobin C, D, E, O, A, a whole lot of very variants that we have like that.
Wow.
So when the problem is when these variants and hemoglobin mix up together. So, and that is where genotype compatibility comes into the mix, that if one marries or a couple gets married without, you know, putting genotype compatibility in the consideration, there are possibilities that that marriage can lead to the death of a child that has sickle cell disease.
Uh-huh.
So that is why it is very essential in Nigeria. And given that, you know, statistics have showed us that Nigeria is the highest, carries the highest burden of sickle cell disease in the world.
Wow.
Every 2 minutes, we are told that child is born with sickle cell disease in the whole world. And in Nigeria alone, we record about 150,000 deaths. So what's the assurance that one of these numbers that we say, because the actual people, these 150,000 people are not just mere numbers. They are people like myself, like other people there. What's the assurance that it will not come from your own family? And that's why genotype compatibility is non-negotiable in marriages today as we speak.
Well, in fact, that's the statistics you gave now is very scary to me. That first you said that Nigeria actually has, the highest number of people that actually carry, you know, the sickle cell, gene in the world. And at the same time, talking about even the, mortality, that we about 160,000, you mean, every year? Wow. That's very, very, that's scary. 160,000 people lost every year to sickle cell in Nigeria. Wow. So it means therefore that it goes just beyond the idea, oh, just AAA that people talk about, oh, yeah, the genotype. Also, that you're talking about the eye color, the skin pigment, and many other things like that are also related to this issue of genotype. All right. Now, if that is the case, often we see emotions taking the driver's seat when it comes to relationships. I have seen one, let me try to say, especially for those that are fair complexion. I have seen one yellow purple, a good idea. You know, you hear young people come up with some of these kind of things like that. So, and couples believe that, you know, love conquers everything. So, while others see genotype testing as probably a sign of weak faith in God, what do you mean? If Allah has destined that, this is the person I will marry, whether he's a genotype, this genotype, that don't bother. Allah's Qadar is already written, so why am I disturbing myself? So, now from your own experience, how can, believers strike a healthy balance, when you're talking about love, faith, and responsibility in this matter? I have seen someone I like very much, and I'm like, no, I must walk down the aisle with this person. But at the same time, someone is also telling me, are you sure this person is, compatible with you on the basis of genotype? So how then do I balance all this together? You know, the love, the faith, at the same time, also being trying to be responsible because I don't want to, fall into troubles in later life. So how do we navigate this?
Okay, so I will come from the Muslim perspective. There's an hadith of Rasul that says that tie your camel and you can trust in Allah.
Tie your camel.
Part of that is actually taking responsible actions that would impact the children in the future. It's not just to say, oh, I'm not this person. I do ask people whenever, questions like this come around. If truly you say love conquers all, will you imagine that a product of that law actually subjected to a lifetime of pain, that there is nothing you want, there is nothing you can do to actually help that person. You are helpless in that situation.
Mm.
That's really love. That is not love. Because there is nothing you can do. When such a child is going through the crisis or what going through any complications that comes with sickle cell disease, no matter how much care you provide as a parent, it does not reduce or stop the intensity of that suffering.
Wow.
So as Muslims, Allah has actually given us a guideline that we should take responsible action and then we should entrust our affairs to Him. And I feel like that is how we Muslims should actually go ahead in situations like this. Because it's not just the love that matters. The love at the first phase of, you know, marriage and love doing, it's going to fade off when you are being troubled with all the stress, the complications that comes with it. You know, the financial burden that actually comes with sickle cell disease is not a very small thing to joke with. It's one thing for the child to be in pain. It's another thing for you to be able to afford the care that such a child requires. So love cannot conquer that.
Love cannot conquer the pain. Wow. I love that. But I'm still trying to wrap my head around it, you know. Some things are better imagined than experienced, actually. But, you know, still talking about the fact that, you know, well, like you said, so in this case, our love does not conquer everything, especially the pain that those who live with that condition go through. Now, you know, because of the reality of today's living, where a lot of people underestimate the reality of those who actually carry this condition, those living with the sickle cell disease. Could you paint a picture for our listeners? What does life truly look like for families and children battling this condition? And why should genotype testing be viewed as an act of mercy, especially for those kids unborn, and not a limitation to probably the kind of person that I can marry?
I see. So let me start with a basic example so that you can relate to it. So like I said earlier, that, you know, a change in the gene is actually what led to other variants of the hemoglobin that is being produced. So I want us to look at the basic example that we can relate with, like, you know, when you're making a caramoimoi, they are both made of genes, but the texture is different. So the same gene that actually codes for the normal one is actually what gives rise to a variant one. And just because of that simple change, the structure of the red blood cell will actually change. It's different. So in a normal red blood cell, you see a round, like a donut shape. But in other variants, you see something like the crescent moon. And just that simple change is where the problem starts from. So now our blood flows through every part of our vessels from head to toe. There's no part of your body that blood does not flow. So just having that sickle kind of red blood cell, the very beginning is that those sickle red blood cells do not take much oxygen as required to the body. So now, even the shorter blood vessels that are in our body, you know, our body has large vessels and small ones. So the smaller ones, just because of that, you know, rigid shape, it doesn't flow enough and it gets stuck and it clumps together at a particular point. So when it clumps together, the other parts that oxygen is supposed to get delivered to, oxygen doesn't reach there. And that starts as soon as that kid is dying. So that's 18 already. So that's what we call vaso-occlusive crisis. So that's just like the very basic complication that can happen in sickle cell disease. Then we have things like, just because of that vaso-occlusion as well, as we call it in science, you know, just blockage, simply to say, we have a lot of complications that can happen. So it starts on the head now. We can have, if such blockage happens in the brain, blood does not get to the brain, and then stroke can occur. That's a complication of sickle cell disease. Same with the eyes. If blood is not flowing to the retina, it can cause blindness. That's another complication. And then if I move to the legs, there is also a blockage where oxygen is not getting to your ankle area, and then there is a continuing sore in the leg that is known as leg ulcers. You know, it's sore taking as much as 10 years to heal. You know, and at the point, sometimes it might lead to amputation and all of those. So that's not complication again. Another is every vital organ can actually get blocked just because the red blood cell is not the way it should be. And then, sickle cell comes with unpredictability. So it's not predictable. You can't say, oh, today I'm fine. In the next 10 minutes, something can happen and you can't just tell. You could actually be fine in the very, you know, morning of that day. And in the next few hours, you just know that you are experiencing a very high amount of pain that could be very, very severe, that needs a serious emergency attention. So that's how sickle cell, how severe it can be. Then there is also a vascular necrosis where the hip bone of the warrior, the person living with the condition, also dies off just because oxygen is not getting there. So the head of that long bone in our hip gets dead, and then the person is rendered immobile, you can't move around, and then you have to do surgery. You have to replace the hip bone, you know, with a stainless, a metal to see, so that, you know, you can move. And that's just a very daily complication. Now, we are talking about daily requirements, because sickle cell is something that has to be managed. It's manageable if you have the finances and if you are ready to put in the work.
Wow.
But that management comes with a lot of money. So, talking about daily drugs, their type of food, their balanced meal. I mean, the average Nigerian cannot afford what we are looking for to maintain a sickle cell warrior, to ensure that they live just a healthy life as the other person. So those are the simple realities that I can explain. Because if I don't stop here, we're not going to stop. We're going to keep here.
Subhanallah.
The complications will just
make Seriously. I just can't imagine someone going through all that. You're only talking even about, you know, so I'm seeing the consequences. I'm even trying to talk about the pain. And I love the fact that you use the word warrior. I'm trying to imagine the pain the person is actually going through, you know, in all of this. It's not just about money. How about you have money? The time it takes to even, you know, give the required attention to this people. And that's why you see the word warrior actually captures it, because they're actually battling a whole lot. See, they are survivors, actually. Seriously. Wow. Well, may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala continue to grant them, you know, strength and succor to over, you know, to withstand, you know, these pains. Seriously, it's now I can understand why it's actually an act of mercy for us to actually ensure this genotype compatibility, so that we can prevent, you know, this avoidable, in a way, mistake, you know, from the parents. All right. But in all of this, naturally, especially when it now comes to, you know, choosing a spouse, you often hear, you know, leaders, elders, parents in the community say, don't worry, Allah will take care of it. So when talking about this incompatible genotype, some even tell these sahabas, the companions, did they check genotype? So why are you disturbing yourself? Don't you have faith? You know, sometimes so they just say, don't worry, Allah takes care of everything. So, what are there some misconceptions that people have, you know, when it comes to this issue of genotype? And what are some of these most common misconceptions, you know, behind this mindset? And how can we actually correct them? Especially because there are more elderly people. And so you want to use faith, you want to use reason without having to sound disrespectful or disobedient. And you also don't want to cause conflict within the family. So how do we go? What are some of these misconceptions, basically? And how can we actually correct them, you know, in a respectful manner without actually having to cause, you know, a rift within the family?
Okay, so there are a lot of misconceptions around sickle cell, and especially in our community, and even particularly in the Islamic community, you know, there is this, like, say, a thin line between medicine and Islam that people tend to say, oh, you have a weak faith, like you earlier mentioned. So some of the common misconceptions is, oh, you know, if you have sickle, or you can't bet a child with sickle cell, let me tell you that one, that only the fourth child of the particular marriage that comes from aunts and heirs would have sickle cell disease. So, you know, if I give it to the first three children and I stop at that stage, the fourth testing, that means I have avoided betting a child that has sickle cell disease. Well, that entirely is false, because when you're talking about giving birth, It is a random combination of the genotype. So there is no specific order that that genotype comes in. And this actually comes from, I don't know if you know the crossing of different genotypes, AS and AS, children that is always moving around. So the last on that particular image is always SS.
SS, yes.
Consciously accepted that is the fourth child that actually has sickle cell disease, which is not
25% chance.
Yes, it's a 25% chance of having sickle cell disease, but that 25% reset at every pregnancy. So the first child could be sick, could have sickle cell, the second child, the third child, or it could even be a mix, and you could be lucky to get it, but you don't know unless you get tested. So Alhamdulillah, we have advancements in medicine now that you can check the genotype of an unborn child, and then you get to decide if you want that fetus to live to term or you want to even abort it. And that would be following a particular guideline. Putting yourself in that kind of situation is very, very, I don't even know the word to put it. It's a very dicey situation to put yourself in when you know you can avoid such. You know, having to decide, do I want this child to live, do I don't want this child to live? That's one of the misconceptions. Another misconception is that, you know, if I just pray enough, this sickle cell is going to stop. Sickle cell disease does not stop at a particular age, or if you eat something, you're going to get killed, or if you drink one, you know, concoction, it's not going to miraculously
disappear.
Your blood, your blood will not change. You know, the person leaves the surface of this earth, the blood will continuously be the same.
Wow.
So that's one, that's another misconception. I think another one would be that sickle cell warriors cannot give birth. That's one, and they don't also, they don't live long enough. Alhamdulillah, like I said, the advancements in medicine that now the quality of care that you are giving to sickle cell warriors are making them live as much as 70, 80.
Wow.
Even the oldest who have lived with sickle cell disease in West Africa, Alhaji Ashiata Lamuda, died at the age of 95 years.
Allah,
so
Akbar.
You can see that people are not that long. So all those misconceptions are coming from, you know, what people used to know in the olden days. You know, the same thing that in the olden days, we heard a lot of our grandfathers say, oh, they had 10 children, but only one got to live and all of that. So most of the time, because they didn't know about, you know, what genocide meant or what they have to check, you know, the different diseases, a lot of these have to be sickle cell disease because it is much more common in this region of our world. You know, it's more endemic in Nigeria. Like I said, Nigeria has their own burden. So you can imagine how many of those children that died then that could have been saved if only they knew that it was sickle cell disease.
And they call, so they call them Abiku, Abiku or Banje and different names.
So another thing I feel like people can solve this issue is that a lot of being warriors, just because of the dynamic situations we find ourselves in, you know, there is that stigma, there is that depression. So you tend to shield yourself away from, you know, socializing with others. So people don't get to see the realities of what it looks like. Yes, it could be very, very severe. But at the same time, you could live a very, very fulfilling life. Yes, it's not going to be easy, but yes, you could live a fulfilling life. And people need to see that part of us so that they can know that, okay, this is how hard it is, but I'm also seeing this person thriving well, even despite living with sickle cell disease. And also in the Muslim community, they tend to shield away from anything that is health, you know. So a very common part is, especially when it comes to the mental health, but because sickle cell is all around, it doesn't just affect you, it affects your family, it affects you as a person, not just physically, it also affects you mentally. So, in other words, because there are so many times you have to be in the hospital, so you can imagine the number of out of 2 days you need to have, you know. Given my own experience, there were days in uni that I had to write exams, even while in the hospital, while having a crisis, just because I didn't want to have a carrier.
Wow.
So those are examples of that. So looking at those kind of examples, we don't talk about it enough for people to see what it feels like living with it. So that's why people have that ideology that just have faith is going to go. No, people still does not disappear like that.
All right, thank you very much. So I think, in fact, in trying to even correct our parents, what we really need is much of education. I think it's about education, really, because all these scenarios that you have painted, in fact, even like the experience of even having to write exams in the hospital because you don't want to have carryover, you don't want to miss the exam, and you have to, you know, having a course to rewrite it the following year and things like that. Wow. Well, I love the fact that so it's not something that would also just disappear and say, don't worry, I'll pray over it and we'll bind it, we'll, you know, we'll cast it and things like that. That's not what would actually happen. Or taking some concoction, don't worry, take this. By the time you take it, it will disappear, or, you know, so, all right, I love that. Now, very quickly, because we'll go on a break after this, but then, from a medical standpoint, now, Can you just tell us some of these different genital combinations beyond just this, you know, SS now that a lot of people know? In fact, when I first, when you mentioned something like C, even DE or something like that now. I know usually the usual combinations that we get to know of, if I, in secondary school, all we're just taught is the AA, the AS, and the SS. All right. So are there other ones? And can you help our listeners understand what some of this pairing means for potential children's you know, health? So that at least for those that are preparing for marriage now, they know the implications of, okay, if I'm this and I'm getting married to this, this is probably the likely result that I would get.
So, like I said earlier, that the different hemoglobins that we have that have paired together to make our blood genital. So, we, the most common hemoglobins that we have are 6, 8, S, C, D, E, and O. There is thousands of them, but those are the most common that we get to see. You know, a lot of people have to see these other genes, and they're very rare. So, now you can pair any of these to form a genotype. But I like to give people this simple approach that if you have one single S in your own genotype and you're getting married to somebody that also has invariants, either S, C, D, or anyone, there's a potential possibility that you're going to have a child with sickle cell disease.
Wow.
So let's say, for example, someone with AS is marrying somebody with CC. Now, there is a possibility that S from that AS and C from that CC can mix up and give birth to sickle cell. So SC is another form of sickle cell disease.
Whoa.
The same thing happens if somebody with AS and SC gets married. Now, there's a possibility of S from the AS and S from the SC. And also, another combination is S and C. As another, so that kind of marriage now between AS and SC, they have SS and SC, there's a possibility that they can have children that have those two types of sickle cell disease.
Wow.
So we can have AA, AS, SS, SC, SD, even SD. I recently heard of, you know, I said you had a case, I think in 2023, somebody that had SD, but, you know, the G was not a variant that is common in Nigeria, it's common in Philadelphia, but from a social linkage, the person, you know, grandparents had that, you know, in the hemoglobin. So then any possibility that once you have S, a single S in both of your genotypes, as you know, couples are intending to get married, there's a possibility of having sickle cell disease. So it's just simple, just do the math and pick one from both partners and put it together and see if you can have sickle cell disease. It's not that simple. It's just that you also now need to know your genotype from a trusted laboratory. It's not just a random laboratory. So nowadays, whenever we tell couples to go for the very, very quality test, which is hemoglobin electrophoresis. So hemoglobin electrophoresis is a medical test that will tell you the type of hemoglobin you have in your body and it will quantify it for you. So as humans, as adults, we have hemoglobin A1, hemoglobin A2, and hemoglobin F, tiny amount of hemoglobin F, which you majorly see in newborn. So that fetal hemoglobin is majorly in newborn, but at 6 months of age, it gets reduced, and then, you know, the children will start producing the regular adult hemoglobin. So as the person that has AS, you're going to know if your A is like maybe 70% A and you have 30% S, that is what the hemoglobin and electrophoresis does. So we tell them to go for those kind of advanced tests so that you are very, very certain, not just a regular genotype test.
All right. Thank you very much. I will go on a short break. When we return, the program continues. Please stay with us.
Slowly, slow my chair. The world waits for you. And your window of time will come shining through. Slowly, slow, don't rush, you know. It'll all come easy. There's some things you can't take back. No regrets for what you're gonna get. Need some thinking down the line. Slowly, slow, my darling. I'm here for you.
Here for you.
And every stumble, every fall breaks my heart in two. I only want the best for you. And every step makes up the man, even though it takes a while. And God will always smile on you, my child. So have faith, have faith.
the bird who feels the sun and sings before the dawn has come. Have faith, have faith, yeah, yeah. Slowly, slow, my boy, I see you strong, and everybody wants to find a place where they belong. But don't you find yourself someday in a cold and dark and lonely place, and you wonder how you got there. I know it gets cluttered in your mind, and you wanna move faster. It seems you're running out of time, but I love you. Together we'll get through. Don't you know? Slowly, slow. Slowly, slow, my son. You wanna be a man, and I guess those days are gone when I used to hold your hand. 'Cause this is the age of winks and smiles and butterflies deep inside, but you'll always be the coolness of my eyes. So have faith. And sings before the dawn has come. Have faith, have faith, yeah, yeah. Slowly, slow, my child, the world waits for you, and your window of time will come shining through. Slowly, slow, don't rush, you know, it'll all.
All right, you're still listening to Everyday Muslim on Women Radio 91.7 FM. It is brought to you by the Muslim Public Affairs Center, MPAC, in partnership with Women Radio 91.7 FM. And I hope that everything will come easy for all of us, including those who are going through the challenge or sickle cell all over the world. We are discussing, before you say I do, why genotype compatibility matters in marriage. And our guest discussant is Hajja Anisa Ishaq Balogun, the founder of Anisa Sickle Cell Foundation. This is someone that is a dedicated advocate in the fight against sickle cell disease in Nigeria. She's the Anisa Sickle Cell Foundation is a registered non-profit organization on a mission to create a future where families and individuals are free from the burden of sickle cell disease in Nigeria. She is a first-class graduate of cell biology and genetics from the University of Lagos, Nigeria. And as someone who lives with a genetic condition, she has witnessed firsthand the huge strain it imposes on such families. Her academic expertise in molecular genetics, coupled with her personal experiences, drives her passion for contributing to the quest for treatment advancement. And that's why we're talking about, before you say I do, why genotype compatibility matters in marriage. You can be a part of this discourse by calling the number 07000 917 917 07000 917 917. Alternatively, you can call 09155 917 917. That is 09155 917 917. Our toll free line for the female callers is 0800 1235 917. That is 0800 1235 917. You can also send a message to us via SMS or WhatsApp or through the number 0815591 7917. I'll take that again, 0815591 7917. This program is also streaming live on YouTube via the Women Radio WFM 91.7 page on YouTube, so you can log into City Studio and have a visual reinforcement of what you're listening to on radio. So we still have Hajja Anisa Ishaq Balogun with us. So Hajja, now because we are trying to link this issue of genotype with marriage, it is discovered that many couples of only get to discover their incompatibility when they've already developed strong emotional bonds, you know, with each other. So at that painful crossroads, is there anything, probably faith-based or practical advice that you would give to such people? How can they make the right decision while preserving their emotional and spiritual well-being? You know, for a lot of them, after going this far, so how will they be able to navigate or take that decision concerning, you know, the continuation of such relationship or the discontinuation of such relationship upon discovery that, you know, using, you know, probably after testing, like you talk about the hemoglobin electrophoresis. So after conducting such a test, they now discover that, I'm not sure this is possible because based on our genotype, we are no longer compatible. So how can they navigate that, please?
Okay, so a lot of people find themselves at that crossroads in Northern Nigeria. And whenever we give out advice, we give it in series. Go ahead with what we call the safeness. So now let me come from the rich perspective, if you can afford it. So, like I said earlier, that you can now test the genotype of an unborn child. So, there's pre-implantation genetic testing that you can do where the genetic material of that child that is not yet born at the same time to testing with can be taken and can be assessed to know what type of genotype he or she has inherited from that parent. So, if it's a genotype that has to do with sickle cell disease, then the patient is left to the parent. Do they want that for the child to grow? Or do they want to, you know, abort it and say, you know, that's one. And there is also the IVF, in vitro fertilization, where the biological material from the male and the female, you know, is put together in the laboratory, under state laboratory practices, by the way. And then the genotype is also assessed, even when that child is not yet even a fetus, because it is diagnosed at that, you know, stage in biology. So the genotype of that is also tested to know if such a child is carrying the sickle cell trait or just the sickle cell gene, or if that child actually has the disease. So I wanted to clarify something. So when I say the sickle cell trait, I mean that you only have a copy of that S gene. So simply saying that you are AS or you are AC or something like that. Yeah. But if I say you have the disease, it simply means that you have two copies of that gene, SS, SC, SD, and the like. So that's the safeness of for those that are financially capable. We are talking here about millions of naira. We're not talking about millions, we're talking about 10 million. As expensive as that, is that expensive? Are you willing to go that route just to be sure that you want the child to come online without having to get all the money? And if you don't fall into that category where you're financially buoyant, the safe idea is for you to stop that marriage. Because it's not so practical to say that married couples, you would not give birth. It's a choice to say you want to give birth or you don't want to give birth. But how many couples can actually, you know, put into consideration that we are going to abstain and not actually give birth? It's quite practically impossible. Those are the two mainstream ideas or advices that we actually give out to people.
Or would you say, okay, let us probably tell the religious scholars to start praying for them so that they don't actually give birth to such a child? All right. Okay, not at all. That's not, you know, the best kind of advice. I love the fact that you're saying that. Well, if you have the financial strength, then you can actually, you know, run some series of tests or take some measures even before the child is born or immediately after, you know, conception to really find out, you know, the status of the child. All right. Now, okay. Now, ideally, because we are now talking about relationship, when should genotype testing take place? And how can we make these conversations more natural within our communities? And what role do you think our religious houses, premarital counselors, community leaders, among others, play in normalizing this as part of responsible marriage preparation?
So ideally, the genotype of someone should actually have been tested when they are young. But because we don't have a universal screening policy in Nigeria, you actually get to know your genitals. Probably some people get to know, you know, when they're entering uni or when they're about to get married. Mm. But in advanced countries, as a child is born, within the first few weeks of life, their genitals is tested so that they can know if they are at risk of a lot of, you know, genetic conditions, not just because of disease. Like I said earlier, our genitals check virtually everything that makes up that particular person. So it doesn't just test for sickness or disease. It can also test if you are having other conditions, you know, like Down syndrome and other conditions that are basically genetic. So, yes. But nowadays, we tend to advise and encourage parents that they should get their child's genotype tested as young as possible, as early as possible, so that they don't wait until they are adults before they know their genotype. And that is why with my foundation recently, we're starting a program. We started a program this year where we call it Typical Self Smart, where we're taking these testing to secondary school so that these children can know their genotype from an early age, and they can also be part of this conversation about their awareness of sickle cell disease and how we can reduce the burden here in Nigeria. So that's when someone should actually know their genotype.
All right. So I love this fact that you're even bringing the message, you know, to the lower levels at the secondary school, probably even primary school, even for parents. Like you have said now, it is even better if we can actually test the genotype as young, as soon as the child is born, so that at least we know the kind of care that we'll give to such a child. Well, that's very, very good. Okay, now, because this is also a religious platform where we also try to talk Islam. So do religious leaders or community leaders or even parents or some other, you know, like even premarital counselors, do they have a role in, you know, trying to ensure that people get this, you know, kind of, you know, information or counseling or as part of their marriage preparation? Do they have a role in that? Because I know probably of some religious houses that would even tell you that. They, in fact, before they would even allow such a union to continue, or before they can actually consecrate such a marriage, you must have done such a test, which you would submit before they would allow such a union to go ahead. So what do you say to this?
And take it very serious. And half of those people are religious leaders. You see a lot of people that when they have issue the very first time and something related to their health, they don't present to the hospital. They prefer to go to their religious leaders or community leader or an elderly person because they believe that their knowledge or, you know, unique experiences can actually give them advices or, you know, give them solutions to that problem. So, and as advocates, we realize that it is these people that, you know, people trust a lot. The people that we want this message to get to, we need to go through the channels that they actually put their trust in. And one of those people are religious leaders, are community leaders, and, you know, are premarital counselors. And yes, in the Islamic community, I'm saying that a lot of us are embracing that, you know, we present our genotype certificates, you know, before telling couples that, okay, you know what, you can go ahead, and they are providing that, possible code and the advice, you know, to tell them that, I'm not sure you can go ahead with this marriage and all of that based on your genotype compatibility. But we also see that not every couple go through the premarital counseling route. So we need to bring that message to involve those community leaders. You know, a typical Islamic setting could just be a simple nikah in the, you know, parlor and all of that. But is that religious leader that is joining that marriage, are they putting such measures that the premarital counselor would do, that say, show me a certificate and all of that? So we need to also, if possible, hold sessions where religious leaders are the ones that we are educating about sickle cell disease. Because I won't lie, a lot of our religious leaders still hold that sentiment as well, that there is nothing like genotype in Islam. I won't, because there was a time like that in Russia where I was telling stars that, oh, I have sickle cell and this is the stuff and this is what it's like, and it's like, there's nothing like that. The doctor just wants to take your money and all of that kind of thing. And I had to start thinking. So now imagine that that kind of person is the one officiating a marriage. You can imagine if such couples say, well, I'm AS, so keep on fetching. Sorry to bring that aspect, but yes, you get what I'm trying to paint here. So we need to actually put them in the making. We are trying to push this message more to reach more people, especially in our community as Muslims.
I love that. Can even imagine, the stars is even denying your own reality. See, there is nothing like that. Subhanallah. Allah Akbar. Well, it shows quite well that there are still a lot of things that we actually need to learn. And we should not, how do I pray, become so arrogant to knowledge to assume that we already know everything. And there are some things that probably we don't know. See, when we, you know, come up with such an attitude, then would actually be manifesting ignorance instead of, you know, knowledge. So I love that. All right. So it should be something that they should add to, you know, probably their knowledge and the kind of responsibilities they undertake for those that are actually intended to marry. Now, on a final note now, because we are driving home this point now. So for young listeners who are thinking about marriage, what one key, you know, piece of advice would you offer? And this advice, I'm talking about something rooted in both science and Islam that could save them from a lifetime of pain and set them on a path to a wise, blessed union. You know, for a lot of people now, I say, well, I'm planning to settle down, and now that I've finished school, I've graduated, I'm about to probably go for service. And some of them are like, it's possible I meet Mr. Wright and you know, Madam Wright at probably the NYC camp or in my year of service or something like that. Or some, probably at least from service, let me have an idea of the person I want to settle down with, so that by the time I'm through with service, then we can start the process. So what advice would you offer them now as a parting shot from you to such people?
The advice I will always give people is get tested. Know your genotype at least 3 times first, because there is no amount of explanation that I want to equate the experiences of living with sickle cell disease. And for everybody that has sickle cell disease, it is different. It's not the way one person experiences it that another person experiences it. So the complications that one person will have might be much more severe than what another person, you know, that also has the same condition would experience. And looking at the way we are in Nigeria, we don't even have enough care. I'm talking about the healthcare that is enough that can actually, you know, give sickle cell warriors the best or the most optimum care that they need. So why should you subject someone that you claim that would, you know, you will love for the rest of your life through that trouble that could have been prevented? And a lot of things that people do not also get to understand is that people that have sickle cell disease, some of them resent their parents out of why did you go ahead with this?
Wow.
And so that kind of puts a very, very complicated interaction between they and their parent. And in this era, I think it's not excusable to have such cases anymore, because in the, you know, like 10 years back now, we can still give the excuse that the laboratories are not so advanced, there's a lot of misdiagnosis, people didn't get to know. But every day you come online, you're going to hear somebody somewhere about sickle cell disease. And because the way sickle cell, Nigeria has the highest burden of sickle cell disease, there is no way you don't know at least one person that has sickle cell disease. It might not be your direct family, but your extended family actually has somebody that lives with sickle cell disease. And from that just experience with them, you might not get to interact with them every day of their life, but from the few examples you might see, you can see how of a dynamic situation it is. It's not just a very simple thing. It's not malaria that you use a drug today, the fever goes down after a few days, and that's the end. It is lifetime. So imagine someone living up to 80 years and continuously they are in that situation. So people will think that you get to 80 years of age, sickle cell should reduce. No, it does not reduce. It continues. I've been in a lot of worries. Even just last week, a 17-year-old man was still in pain crisis. So it does not stop. My advice is get tested. Know the genotype of your partner before you go ahead. Sit down and have a talk between yourself. Is this something you can avoid? Like, you know, the examples we stated or the advices I've stated earlier of the safe net, can you go through that means? Or the best way is to part ways and be more compassionate on the generation that will actually come from you, because it is avoidable. So we can try as much as possible and tie our camel as Muslims.
Jazakumullah khairan. Aja Anissa, I want to thank you. I want to appreciate you for the insight and the practical experiences that you have shared. Sincerely, I love the note upon which you ended. Look at that we can actually avoid. It's not excusable anymore. And for the fact that that note on where many sickle cell warriors resent their parents, that why did you bring me into this world to actually, you know, experience this life of pain? It's not even about whether you can afford it or not, but about the fact that continuously I go through this crisis, you know, the pain, the treatment and things like that. To not talk about even the fact that Najan medical, you know, the health sector does not have what it takes, and that's a fact, to, you know, really provide the kind of care that these people, people living with this condition, you know, would require. Sincerely, it is an avoidable mistake, and I hope that for those listeners out there, you can avoid this. See, don't, you know, be blinded by so-called love. That is not love, that you would subject those that you say you claim you love, your children, your unborn children. Why would you rather expose them to this life of pain? So please let us avoid this for as much as possible. Jazakumullah khairan, Aja Anissa, and I wish you all the best in all your future endeavors. And I hope that your foundation, the Anissa Sickle Cell Foundation, will continue to grow in leaps and bounds. And we hope we'll be able to reach out to you so that we can also, you know, continue this kind of engagement, especially as we reach out to, you know, the grassroots on this particular condition. All right. So, thank you very much. So, to everyone out there, welcome. So, you can listen again to this episode or other previous episodes of Everyday Muslim on mpac-ng.org. Scroll down and click on the MPAC project to view Everyday Muslim past uploaded episodes. Follow Everyday Muslim on social media, Facebook, Everyday Muslim, Instagram, Everyday Muslim 01 as a single word, all in lowercase. Inshallah, Everyday Muslim will make its way back to your airwaves next week, same time, 11 a.m., same station, WFM 91.7. But before we go, I'd like to give a shout out to Malam Kosim Akindombi of the Muslim Public Affairs Center. He's our executive secretary. Today is his nikah. So as you tie the knot with your beautiful wife, pray Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala give you, grant you marital bliss, you know, bless the union with good children and, you know, pious offsprings. And at the same time, also pray for the people of Gaza and the entire Palestine as they go through this, you know, torturous, you know, challenge of their lives as they try to, you know, cling to life. And we pray that Allah will bring peace and succor and tranquility to them against this oppression, against, you know, this injustice, against, you know, the genocide, you know, which they are actually experiencing. I pray that Allah will bring peace to every troubled place on the surface of the earth, including here in Nigeria. Our hearts go to soldiers who lost their lives in the you know, recent insurgent attack in Borno. That's how far I'll be able to go on the program today. I remain Abdul Hakim Qasim. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I praise Allah for sending me you, my love. You found your home, it's here with me, and I'm here with you. Now let me let you know, you've opened my heart. I was always thinking that love was wrong, but everything was changed when you came along. Oh, and there's a couple of words I wanna say. For the rest of my life, I'll be with you. I'll stay by your side, honest and true. Rest of